Alright, can turn that off now. I'll turn this back on, actually, I guess. Can bring up the lights again if it'll work. I'm sorry, here, main lights. No idea. If anybody has any questions from that before we go on, I'd be happy to take some sort of questions now, but... No? Alright.
The project was called Video Mail. Have you done anything with the video portion?
That's a very good question, and that will be something that I'm going to be addressing momentarily. But yeah, the answer is not yet. But the answer is that is one of the main components of the next project that I'm going to talk about. So what I'll do is I'll go on a couple of slides just to summarize that what that was. So I'll just go through these relatively quickly because this summarizes largely what was on that. But in case this reminds you of anything that you saw in there that you want to ask me about. But we have this large video archive. It gave us a very real problem for which we needed multimedia information retrieval techniques. And so we actually built some jointly with Cambridge University Engineering Department and the computer lab there with Karen Spark-Jones, who's a big IR person. So you've seen this. So as you say, this was all geared to the audio track. It was mainly a speech recognition task in some ways, although because we were indexing video mail, we could actually then browse within the video. There's an interesting point here, though. This is something that people often think that the IR techniques that are used for a text would just sort of apply, or that there wouldn't be that much, there wouldn't be really any sort of interesting factors that would come out of taking those and applying them to text that has come out of, say, a speech recognition system. But there actually is, because if you're doing keyword spotting, audio keyword spotting, you will often, even if you have ideal keyword spotting, you're going to get errors. Because, for instance, if you have the word locate, and you have the text, hello, Kate, the locate syllables in there are going to be virtually indistinguishable to an audio phone recognizer. So even if you have perfect word spotting, you're going to get errors. And if you think about one of the very basic techniques of text-based IR, the idea of using the inverse document frequency to weight search requests. So in other words, if you're searching for text that contains three words, if one of those words occurs in all of the documents in the entire set, that will be given less weight because they figure that that's going to be less good in distinguishing between all of the documents. Yeah. But if you have a triphone, three phones in a row that often cause one of these hello, Kate, locate problems, those are going to be filtered out by the inverse document frequency method, because if they occur in almost all of the documents, then when you type those in as when you use those words as one of your search queries, they're going to be given a very low weight, which actually minimizes the impact of those errors. And that's a simple example of how that shows that that even if you have relatively poor speech recognition techniques, you can still often get reasonably good information retrieval results from those. So it's and that's something that's actually quite important in these things, because we know on the audio side that we can't get perfect results, and we really know that on the video analysis side that we can't win all that big. So that was just a point I wanted to make. But actually, I probably don't have to go through these because you've seen these in the video. This is the third of the three phases of this project that they talked about, using phone lattices, where the keyword spotting was completely speaker independent and vocabulary independent. So because this was based on a sort of phoneme by phoneme analysis, building up these phoneme lattices, any words whatsoever, it will at least be possible to spot any word. They don't have to be in some fixed vocabulary. This sort of word spotting is considerably less accurate than large vocabulary speech recognition for in-vocabulary words. But of course, it's infinitely better than large vocabulary recognition for out-of-vocabulary words, because there, if a word is not in the vocabulary, you won't recognize it. So so one of the things that our two new projects are going to try to concentrate on is getting the best of both worlds, using the phoneme lattice approach to get for out-of-vocabulary words, and sort of regular large vocabulary speech recognition for the in vocabulary words. And this is something really. Actually, once again, if like along the way, if I'm feel free to interject, ask me questions. The user interface. Yeah, we've already gone through this actually. This is one thing there wasn't much focus. This is a fairly bog standard IR interface in a way, and this is something else that in our new projects, and particularly the one that I'm running, we're going to be concentrating more on getting good user interfaces, which when you're dealing with video particularly is actually very important. I think people don't realize how important that aspect is. Right. So now I'm going to talk about the two follow-on projects to this and what we're doing in these areas. First one is called MDR, stands for Multimedia Document Retrieval, very original. Now this one really did follow on directly from VMR. VMR was a UK government-funded project that we were involved with Cambridge University, as you saw. And this project is on exactly the same basis. It's a three-year funded UK project. It's once again going to be concentrating entirely on the audio soundtrack side. New things here is one thing that I've already mentioned, that they're going to try and combine the phoneme lattice-based approach to out-of-vocabulary words with the large vocabulary speech recognition for the in-vocabulary words. And that, judging from the results that we've seen from those two different systems, that should be a big winner. It's not clear exactly how they're going to be combined, and that's going to be part of the research on this. This project is only just getting going now. The main corpus here is going to be broadcast news that's going to be captured every day, and an hour a day or so of broadcast news. And another aspect of this is that they're going to try to use audio classification techniques to be able to both identify and perhaps filter out background noises, background music, also identify whether the language is actually English or not, and that sort of thing. So our role in this is considerably smaller than our role was than ORL's role was in that VMR project that you saw. So we're more or less just giving them kit and giving them a little bit of consultancy on that side. And because of that, we've ramped up our own project with another terribly original name, MMIR, for Multimedia Information Retrieval. This project is within ORL itself. We have six full-time people working on this. I'm sort of running it. And our project is quite a bit different than either of the other two in the sense that we are going to concentrate on analyzing the video as well as analyzing the audio track. And what we really want to see is how is that going to work for how can you get really good multimodal indexing and multimodal querying. And it's actually a very hard problem in all sorts of ways, and I'll talk about this a bit more later. But this is mainly what distinguishes this from the other two projects, the one that was done before and MDR. And we want to be able to browse both. We want to be able to actually browse large sets of mixed data, so images, video, audio, and have some sort of a coherent interface to all of those types of data and to large sets of data like that. And it's almost certain that we will cross-fertilize with the MDR project because they'll be really concentrating on the speech, and we're going to take whatever they do on that and just kind of plug it into our system. And likewise, they may do something with our stuff on the image side. This project is also new. VMR ended about 6 months ago, and this is just sort of starting to get ramped up now. We've just been doing some things. We've been trying to identify the various data sets that we want to use this for. We're doing some joint work with some people at Harvard, and they've actually given us a few thousand hours worth of undergraduate lectures, which we're going to be digitizing for them and then using that as one of our corpuses. Their slant on that is using digitized lectures for sort of interactive educational things. They want students to be able to sort of go over lectures and sort of study for exams and stuff using this sort of multimedia system. So we came up with a fairly good sort of mix there between our technology and their set of motivations. So that's one of the data sets we're going to use. The audio track there will be very interesting. The video track, like the video track for this lecture, is not going to be that interesting. It's going to be people like me pacing back and forth and pointing at the boards. But because there is actually going to be text in the actual video, we may also do some work with trying to either match this with electronic copies of the slides that we can also have online, and or actually use some sort of OCR type thing to actually capture the data off of the screen and use that to index the data as well. So that's something that will be particularly useful to for these lectures. We're also going to be doing news capture. We're actually capturing about an hour a day worth of broadcast news, BBC News. And that will make up one of our data sets that we're going to try this stuff on. There's more interesting video there because they sort of cut from the anchor to some sort of random news scene and sort of back again. So there will be interesting image processing things to do there. Some other people that have done work on this have noticed that news broadcasts follow a very fixed pattern, and that's something else that you can also exploit if you know that you're searching news broadcasts. The people at CMU, the Infomedia project, they've done quite a lot of work on this. And then we're also capturing a couple of the English online daily newspapers. And this will be interesting for this idea that I was talking about browsing heterogeneous sets of data, because our television broadcast news and these online papers are clearly going to be quite linked. I mean, there'll be the same news stories showing up in them both, and we hope to be able to have some sort of system where you can easily cross-reference between the two and use one to help you search on the other, that kind of thing. And we want to be able to search both on the text and the images that are used in the online papers, which is more and more that they are actually using reasonably detailed images, so that's good. Another source, and one of the first motivations for this sort of extended project was the web. Indexing all the images and maybe all the video and audio tracks that are out there on the web. DEC is very interested in this as well. I just have come back from a visit with Brian Eberman, who's running the DEC Media Vista project. And this is really their aim. I mean, they're actually sitting on something pretty big, I think. He wasn't able to tell me a whole lot, but they're actually working quite hard on this. You know, clearly that is a completely random set of images, videos, that kind of thing. So this will really challenge multimedia information retrieval techniques. For us, we're of course not going to be aiming for the whole web, but DEC is actually aiming for the whole web because they've got a lot of hardware to throw at it. But so what we'll likely do is, in the first instance, is grab, you know, all the images that we can find in the UK or something like that, and see whether we can index those. And Brian Eberman was quite pessimistic about the current state of the video on the web. He figured that, in fact, he says to somebody at Georgia Tech, I think, did some sort of brief kind of analysis, who figures that about 95% of the MPEGs that are on the web at the moment are pornographic. So there's not much, you know, there's not much useful video out there at the moment. So if that's the case, then, and of course, this is why our main corpuses are going to be fixed corpuses of identifiable data rather than these web things. But we are going to try it on the web as well. And we have other ongoing negotiations with various bits of the BBC. There's this BBC monitoring service who monitor TV and radio around the world. And they actually came to us because they need some way of indexing all these tapes they have. So we'll probably get some fairly large corpuses from them. And there's a couple of film archives that we're currently talking to. There's a big headache in this whole area, of course, is copyright. So it's actually a real sort of headache. So those are the data sets that we're aiming at, and the way that we're going to analyze this data on the audio side, we're going to do basically the same thing that the MBR project is going to do. We're looking at soundtrack classification as well, and we are also going to use both large vocab and phonemodus-based speech recognition. What we're going to do initially is simply use what already came out of the VMR project, and then as the MBR project carries on, we'll probably pull over the new versions that they've got, like that. But then, so we're in a sense, we're less interested in that because there are people next door to us really working away on that. We're interested in this side of actually parsing the images. And we're very careful to use the word parsing here rather than understanding, because anybody that has looked at this problem in any shape or form knows that it is extremely, extremely hard. You know, we're not fooling ourselves that we can do anything very intelligent for random images. But we've actually come up with a reasonably good basic image parser now that does these five things: the edges, regions, color, texture, and shape. And we've used some non-standard edge detection and region growing algorithms that whose details I actually can't go into yet, but for various political reasons. But we're actually quite happy with the behavior of this. And the idea here is to do relatively simple classification of these images in terms of identifying regions within these images, saying roughly where they are relative to the other regions in the image, and what color they are, what texture they are, and what shape they are. Shape that we've done so far is simply saying how we give each region a coefficient that says how round or how square it is. But we're actually hoping to do more on that to get finer sort of details on the shape side. And then in terms of video, we're just going to use essentially off the shelf shot parsing techniques. Shot parsing is just breaking a video into separate coherent scenes. So on like a news broadcast, it would be obvious. It's going, you know, like the anchor shot is one shot, and then they go to some news scene, like I was saying. And that's the next shot. And there are fairly standard ways of finding out where the sort of scene breaks are, where the pans and zooms are, where the fades and crossfades are. And so we're just going to use off-the-shelf stuff for that. We're going to use more interesting things for the keyframe detection. And that's where within each shot, you have to pick out a few keyframes that you're actually going to index on, because of course it's not feasible to actually index on every single frame in a video, because it would take too long and it would take too much storage. What most people do is they choose the sort of first, middle, and last frame and use those as these keyframes. But that's what CMU does anyway. But we're going to try and do something slightly more intelligent there. We haven't thought about exactly what it is yet, but motion as well. We want to also incorporate some way of saying, you know, I would like to find a clip that has a round red blob moving from left to right at such and such a speed. We're going to try to incorporate that as well. It turns out that the MPEG motion vectors aren't quite enough to do that, so we'll have to do our own motion analysis. And if this all sounds a bit like vaporware at the moment, it's because it is. What I'm talking about mainly is what we're going to do. We have actually finished a first version of this image parser yet, and we have yet to do experiments with it too on large sets of data. But you know, this is a fairly new project, and this is what I'm telling you about is what we're going to be doing. So that's why. Just to show you the cartoon dog, which this is the. Now, because I could only print the actual photograph out at a fairly low resolution, these don't look as different as they would if you could see the actual photograph. But what this is an automatically generated cartoon version of this photograph of a dog using our image parsing technique. So this is doing what I said. This is using our multi-scale edge detector to find all the edges, growing regions out from using, it uses Voronoi regions, and then giving each region a color and texture and shape assignment. And also, the moment we break each image up into nine quadrants, also nine nonents, if you want. And each region also has a figure saying how much of that region is in each of those nine quadrants to give us a rough sort of distribution of these regions. And this is just like a bit of visual feedback, so you can see how it is doing. And you can see that it's not perfect. We've lost the dog's left shoulder there because there wasn't much of a line between, or because there's actually not much contrast between his shoulder and that bit of background there. And there are, of course, just millions of things that you can tweak on these things, and they'll all have a really, really big impact on the final indexing of these images. And this is another thing that actually makes this very hard. As soon as you make a small change, you have to re-index your whole corpus. And one of the aims of this is to deal with really, really big corpuses. So there's a lot of things that we have to be careful with. But so um, So that's the image parsing. Now, another side of this is the information retrieval side. I gave you a very simple example of how what looks like a bog-standard information retrieval technique, the inverse document frequency, can actually have subtle implications for non-textual data. And we want to look at, now that we're dealing with both audio and video data, and still image data as well, we want to see how how existing IR models will behave with these new types of data, and B, if there are ways that we can change these IR models to make them behave better with image and audio data. So we're going to look at all three of the sort of basic models, the vector, the probabilistic, and the inference net models, and see how those can go. So that's at the IR engine side of things. The really interesting bit, though, is how do you come up with a decent user interface for this system that we're mooting? And how is that going to interact with the IR engine? Relevance feedback, when you search on, if you're searching on both the soundtrack and the image track of a video, first of all, how do you input the queries, as I said here? Do we let you draw a little sample, say, find the images that look like this? Do we give you a palette of existing images and say, choose one of these or choose some sort of sub-areas from these and find the images like this? Which is what the people at UMass do. There's all sorts of questions here, and each choice that you make on the user interface impacts on the type of IR model that you're going to use in order to get the proper relevance feedback, and it's a real mess. And this is the real core of the problem, as far as I'm concerned. I think that the sort of technological bits, analyzing the video and the audio, we can do something with those, but we know that we can't be perfect, even on the audio track. We can't be perfect. And we know that on the video track, people that have tried to do image understanding have run into walls almost every way they turn. We know that it's going to be hard. But I think that we can make up for it by coming up with a decent interactive interface so that the user can sort of help to hone in on where he wants to go. So the whole idea of visualization and database navigation and stuff all comes into this. And this is, as I said, I'm sort of generally overseeing this whole project, but this is part of it that I'm intending to actually do some work on, is this one. This is what I'm going to be doing, and I think that it's very important. How am I doing for time here? Oh, I'm okay. Yeah, I think I'm going to be short, in fact. So, just a little bit about what we actually have in place now and what we're intending to do in terms of the organization of this system that we're going to build. As a sort of preface to this, I mean, our lab has always been a sort of build it and use it kind of lab. I mean, we're a very systems engineering oriented lab. So we like to take technology, bolt it together, and use it and see how it works, and then change it if we have to. So we are actually building up a proper systems infrastructure for this, and our systems infrastructure is going to be based around CORBA. I don't know how many of you know sort of about CORBA, but it's a distributed object model that makes it very easy to construct plug-and-play object-oriented systems. The fundamental core of any CORBA system is its ORB, its Object Request Broker. And you can buy them. There's one, I think the most popular one is the one called Orbix from a company called Iona. We've actually written our own called OmniORB 2, which in fact is freely available on the web if you want it. And it is quite interesting in that it is a very lightweight orb, very, very low latency, low overhead orb, unlike almost all of the others. So we are intending to at least experiment with actually piping the multimedia data through the orb. And this is something that you simply couldn't do with any of the orbs you can buy because it would be way, way too slow. As it turns out, even with our orb, we may still have to have a sort of, back route from, I guess it would be from, where are we here, from sort of here to here. There may have to be an arrow there that actually doesn't go through the CORBA infrastructure. But if we can do this, and we know that that we can for everything except possibly the actual multimedia transport. It's going to make it very easy for us to sort of plug and play new sort of image analysis, audio analysis modules, video analysis modules. The user interface will also be able to be isolated from all aspects of the system by nice, clean Corba wrappers, because you can get orbs for Java, which is what we're going to use for our user interface. We're going to use Java for that, the Intel JMF to actually render the images and the video, and then you can buy Java orbs. We actually haven't added Java to our own orb, so we're going to buy in for that. On the IR side of things, we're going to take somebody's existing search engine and modify it, because we don't want to write our own. And there isn't anything that sort of interesting in doing that. You can get ones that you can fully tweak. So iSearch from the CNIDR is one such one, which looks pretty good. InQuery, you can't get source to, of course, but we're going to use that because we have it lying around anyway. And we may be able to do, based just on its sort of existing API, we may be able to tweak it enough to sort of get it to look at images using our image parsing model. And there's something called Okapi from City University that Karen Spark-Jones was involved with creating, so we may use that. In order to actually turn the broadcast news and the Harvard lectures into MPEG, we're using the kit that you saw in that video from one of our rollout companies called TSL that make MPEG cameras. And of course, now that we're funded by Oracle, we're going to use Oracle for the thing. I mean, why not? Because we can get it for free now, so which is something. So and also, I mean, it looks like it'll actually be reasonably good for the job. So and Oracle 7 doesn't have a proper Corba interface, so we've actually built one because we have Oracle 7 now. But we're on the beta sort of sites for Oracle 8, which does have a proper Corba interface. So hopefully we'll be able to sort of plug that in when it becomes time. Yes, and I say here we have a big UltraSpark machine with 7 processors on it, and we're aiming for a sort of terabyte store. But of course, at the moment it's just 0.1 of a terabyte, so it's not exactly a full terabyte store. But we're going to need it, of course, because even these Harvard lectures, right? If we, you know, 1,000 hours of these Harvard lectures is, you know, what it's like roughly 700 megabytes an hour. So right there, we're talking a heck of a lot of data. So we are going to be ramping that up, of course. So basically, throwing as many disks at it as we can. Right. I only have one more slide. Just to give you an idea of what the plans are, the project has just gotten going in the last sort of 4 months or so. Towards the end of this year, because we've already finished that first phase of our image parsing algorithm, we're going to write a little still image retrieval prototype. A, to sort of test out that system infrastructure that I showed you, and B, to test out this image parsing algorithm. So we're right now building up a collection of several thousand relatively high quality images, and we're going to see how this image parsing does in indexing those. And in order to do that, we're going to have to start looking at all these issues that I talked about user interface and about system infrastructure and all that. So that's our first sub goal. And then we have all sorts of ongoing activities on this. We're continuing to tape things and turn them into MPEGs. We have a guy working on language model development for the large vocabulary speech recognition and on training the speech recognizers. Another guy working on getting the shot parsing and keyframe detection going. Anytime that we do anything that's going to plug into the system, we put Corba wrappers around it. Oracle database stuff, we have guys working on that. The IR and UI side of things, I'm looking at that, and we have another guy joining in the fall who's going to be looking at that with me. And so hopefully by about a year from then, we're going to try to have some sort of a prototype that does basically the things that I've been talking about, indexing videos, at least a few hundred hours of these Harvard videos, for instance, on both their soundtrack and their image content. And actually, I didn't add here that we're also grabbing things off the web all the time, but I guess that comes into there. So that's it, actually. Just a bit about what we're doing in that area and what we hope to do. And I'll take questions now. Yeah?
Well, maybe two. Number one, the images you're dealing with, are they compressed? Or are they, as they come from the camera? I mean MPEG and all that.
The MPEG images are compressed. MPEG has built-in compression. Yeah, they are.
You're dealing with compression.
Yes. Yeah. Now, but although, sorry. Do you mean on our our image parsing algorithm does not work on compressed images. We have to uncompress them first. Yes.
Well, of course, uncompressed, but the second part of the question is how much damage does the MPEG do to the details of which you make interesting? Can anybody study that one?
No, I don't think, I mean, I guess you're right. It is a slightly lossy form of compression. Yeah, but of course we have no way of really knowing that because the only digital versions of these images that we get are the ones that we get off of the MPEGs. I guess the thing is when we deal with still images, of course, we can get much higher resolution images from there. But once again, it will still be hard to see how that. I mean, I guess we could try to force some of those. We could perhaps force two versions of each of those images and to sort of push one through an MPEG and back again, and then do that. But we haven't thought about that.
No, I'm just thinking that.
But yeah, you're right. That
lead stuff from camera, the best you get, and analysis.
Yeah. But of course,
and
think you know.
Do the MPEG and try again.
Yeah, but it's I mean, you know, with the sort of with the vast quantities of data that we're talking about here, you know, it'd be very hard.
Of images would be enough.
Oh, I see. You mean just choose the random things? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Actually, we hadn't thought about that, but that is something that we probably should think about. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
With your image parsing techniques, you seem to be able to get some features out of the images. But is there any evidence that those features?